Hello, Honky.
Evening, there, Miner. I started the recording, but I gotta deal with some issues here real quick. Nothing major, just I have a child who doesn't want to go to sleep. So I'm gonna be I started the recording. I'll kind of check out for a few minutes, but I'll be back in soon, hopefully. All right?
Don't worry. Take care of your responsibilities. We'll be here.
All right, I'll talk to you guys in a few minutes.
Hey guys, what's up? Anybody out there?
Hello, Joe. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Let me fix my audio, though. Okay, go ahead and say something else.
Hello, Joe. Can you hear me?
Yep. Perfect. How's it going,
right.
Ed?
Thanks. It's going fine.
I suppose I should bring up the show notes. Hey, Ed, do you need a link for the show notes?
Yes, I do. Thanks.
Yep, no problem.
All right, I'm back. Evening, Joe and Ed.
Hey, Honky. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
Can't complain.
Evening, Minix.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, you sound good.
Hey, Honky, what part of the country are you in?
I'm on Plumbo right now, so it might sound kind of rough.
Yeah, it's some background noise, nothing too bad.
Yeah. I'm up in the Northeast. I'm in Massachusetts.
Boston?
No, I'm Cape, the arm of Massachusetts there.
How are you making out, Honky?
Okay.
By the way, for you streaming fans, there's a new, to me, service out called Magellan, which is all documentary.
Cost or free?
Cost service.
I tell you, all these protests against Good Omens makes me want to go watch it.
There are protests against Good Omens?
Yeah, check it out. Good Omens.
Yeah, it's a great show. I finished it.
Yeah, well, evidently, there's a petition against Netflix, mind, to stop Good Omens from having a season, despite the fact that Good Omens is on, you know, Amazon, and they're not planning on doing a second season because they finished the story.
Well, never let the never let the facts get in the way of your protest.
They kind of left the ending open where they could try to do more stuff if they wanted to.
Well, it's a Neil Gaiman book, right?
I believe so.
Neil Gaiman is rather known for leaving his books open-ended and then not writing a second one.
That sounds about right.
Take American Gods, for example. I don't think he was planning on writing a second one, but I think now he is, since the Amazon show did so well. So maybe there will be a second book to Good Omens, but maybe not.
Well, American Gods is what? That's Stars?
I didn't watch it on Stars, so I don't know. I watched it on a streaming service. I think it was Prime.
Okay. I forget which. I'll have to look that one up. Because I wanted to see it because I loved the book. I thought the book was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. The book was great. And the first season, I haven't watched the second yet. I understand it's supposed to be out, but I'm not sure. The first season really went with like the first half of the book really well.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. But that's how they worked the second season angle on that one.
So what's the basis of the protests? What are they saying is so horrible about it?
It's normalizing Satanism.
So they're protesting that and not like, I don't know, Sabrina?
Oh, there are protests against Sabrina as well. I mean, come on. They actually said Hail Satan in that.
Repeatedly.
So yeah, there were definite protests against that one. But they've had a second season, and I thought the second season was pretty good once you got through the first half, but that seems to be Netflix thing where the first half of any of their shows, the first half of the season is really, really slow, and the second half is fairly action-packed.
Right. Alrighty, sir. Talking to Minix. That's right. I got a Jessica Jones, the third season came out. I started that.
But I haven't started it yet.
Yeah, and I just...
I am planning on watching it.
What's that?
I am planning on watching it.
Now, have you watched all of the Netflix Marvel series?
Yeah, all the rest of it I've watched.
It's so depressing.
Except for the last episode of Defenders. I just couldn't struggle through it anymore.
Really? I really dug Defenders.
Oh, dude. I found it really boring.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought the last episode was one of the best, too.
It probably was. I just couldn't get through it. And that kind of made me miss some things when the third season of Daredevil started up.
Right.
Yeah, Jessica Jones is the last of it. And considering how well Punisher was doing, it's kind of disappointing.
It's very disappointing.
Yeah. And I understand that the whole concept is Disney might pick up those titles. They might use the same actors, et cetera, et cetera. But I don't know.
I'm telling you, there's no better casting for the Punisher.
Yeah, no, I agree. But it's the type of thing where, you know, I don't really want more services, but I might just switch everything over and try Disney since they just have so many freaking titles right now. And they are supposed to be cheaper to start off with Netflix. But my concern is that they're being cheaper than Netflix to kill off all other streaming services, and then they'll start jacking up their prices.
Right.
Once they're the only streaming service left.
Yeah, but they don't offer enough stuff to be the only streaming service out there.
They're offering a lot. I mean, for stuff that they own, they're offering a lot more than anybody else. I mean, they bought up Fox. They bought up controlling share in Hulu.
Yeah, but from my understanding, like, a lot of the Fox shows and stuff will be on Hulu. not their streaming service. Like, there's, like, they own the controlling, yeah, like you said, the controlling power of Fox. They own different sports service, like the ESPNs. I think all the ESPNs and a couple of other
that falls under Disney, yeah.
Yep, but they each have their own separate streaming service. They're not going to throw it all under one roof.
Right, they want to keep it somewhat separated, but it'll still be a part of their service.
True.
And from what I understood, a lot of people are thinking that they're going to keep most of their family-friendly and kid-friendly stuff on the Disney streaming and then put a lot of the more adult-oriented content onto Hulu. I haven't seen anything official on that, just a lot of speculation.
Yeah.
And, you know, them owning Marvel and Fox and ESPN and God knows what else and still trying to buy up more, they will have more content than anybody else. Plus, with, you know, Marvel Studios and the fact that they're already set up to do a lot of their own TV shows and recording, they're going to be bringing out a lot more original, new content than anybody else really has the ability to. Right?
That makes sense, yes.
And they'll keep it all in their own streaming service and nowhere else?
That's probably the current plan, unless it doesn't go real well. Then, you know, what a smart company would do is have it on their streaming service for the first 6 months and then sell it to other streaming services.
I never hear anybody talk about YouTube Prime. We're on Netflix. And I don't want to subscribe to more than one service, but
exactly.
I wouldn't mind quitting Netflix and starting YouTube Prime just to see what it's like.
YouTube Prime, I guess they are red. It's hard to tell the services apart. They have a couple of their own original content shows that aren't terrible from what I understand. I haven't watched the Karate Kid stuff, but I hear it's supposed to be good. I have watched Jumper, it's not Jumper. It's based on the book Jumper. I think it's called Reflex, and that was pretty good. I don't know if anybody's read the book Jumper, the book series that goes along with it, or the movie.
I think I've heard of the movie.
The movie was okay. The books were pretty good, the first book especially.
Yeah, I am on YouTube, but only on the premium, you know, $10 a month, whatever, base service.
Right, they have their 40 a month service, which also provides a lot of TV station stuff, I guess.
Well, I have problems drinking from the YouTube fire hose already.
Yeah, there's a lot you can get for free on YouTube. That's kind of awesome.
Also, a lot of the stuff that boils down to, you know, $3 or $4 after a while saves me from having to sign up to a streamer.
Yeah, I did just see an ad today on YouTube when I was watching Philly D about getting to watch Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey for free with ads. But I don't think my wife is a big fan of any of the Bill and Ted stuff.
Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey?
Yeah, the second movie.
You recommend that?
If you like lighthearted, cheesy 80s comedy.
It's perfect.
Actually, were they 80s or 90s?
I think early 90s.
Yeah, it was probably early 90s.
I tell you, what I'm going to have to do is go through my YouTube subscriptions. And I have some speed dial modules installed on my browsers and just plug everything into different categories in speed dial pages so that my browser will look rather like an old-fashioned jukebox where you flip the page, you know, like you used to have at the counters of a restaurant.
Well, one of my favorite tech shows has ended, and I'm looking for another one.
Which one was that?
Tech Thing. I really enjoyed Tech Thing because, you know, it wasn't all about building a computer. Because, you know, I already know how to do that. Or, you know, testing how fast computers run. It was about tech in general.
Sorry, I don't know that.
So I'm looking for something to replace it that's a little bit more lighthearted than most of the stuff you find these days on Twitch. Since they got rid of know-how and the new screensavers. But that was last December. So that's, you know, I still watch Hack 5, but he's really gone out of the studio on that one, and they closed down the studio, and I don't know what else is going on there with that. And I know they're still doing the Threatwire, but it really feels like, you know, Darren might be kind of done. Like, he got a little burnt out after doing it for forever.
Well, that's understandable.
Yeah. I'm just looking for something else in that vein to start watching. Either something like Know How or something like Tech Thing. And I don't know where to look for it. I mean, I watched Tronics Fix, which is kind of cool. But just because he's, you know, fixing things. But a tech show that's about tech. That's not about, you know, benchmarking. And yes, I still watch Linus Tech Tips.
Yeah, if I were going to build a heavy machine, some of the stuff that has come up on the X-79, whatever, stuff coming out of China seems interesting.
The ARM stuff? I'm not sure on the
X-79. X-79 uses older generation Xeon processors, 6-core, 12-thread. Five core, 10-thread, that kind of thing.
Hmm.
One of which is a dual socket motherboard.
Yeah, some of the dual socket ones can get really fast.
Well, it's,
and the Xeons, yeah, they got really good Xeon processors out there.
Well, I think this is designed for, well, they say it's for gaming, but I was looking at it as a VM platform. But I have a feeling that it requires, you know, 500-watt power supply or bigger.
That's not a big deal.
Yeah, well, I'm still staying with low-end i5s for the stuff that I want to build. I don't need a lot of horsepower.
Mm.
Thing I'm looking at right now is an i5, like 3470 or something.
Is 50 going to be here?
Supposed to be. I think that's what we're waiting on.
Actually, I'm going to be setting up a dual socket system. They'll just be in two towers side by side. Yes, I will be getting Synergy to run them.
It's a great program.
Now, that's basically a site license, isn't it?
Basically a what?
When you buy Synergy, you get basically a site license because...
Well, I know you can pay for it, and then still, all that gets you access to is the most recent version, and you can use that on as many machines as you want. But there's still a free version available, too, which works just fine.
I'll have to see which works.
Yeah, versions in the repos.
I've got a couple of early APU desktops that put side by side. They should be pretty nice composite server.
So has anyone ever used Wake on LAN?
No. I mean, I know what it is, but no.
I've tried to get it working, but I haven't been able to get it on the systems that I'm running now.
So I've been trying to do Node-RED to do something where I can say to my Alexa to, you know, turn on a computer and have it send a Wake on LAN thing to this computer right down here. And I've just, I haven't spent a lot of time recently, but I've just been banging away at it a little while back, and I've had no luck with that.
Sounds interesting. What have you tried so far?
Let me see. Let's see if I can pull up what I've been working on. So I've been pretty much using either the Debian wiki or the Arch wiki for the problem I think I'm having is getting this computer to receive the Magic Pack packet. And to do that, I need to get it so the interface is... So I've been using ETH tool dash S interface WOL and then G to set it to receive the magic packet. But
now isn't Wake on LAN BIOS level?
Yeah, there's something you have to set up in the BIOS as well, but you also have to set something up in the operating system. So as far as I know, I turned everything on right in the BIOS, but I can't get it to, like, I'll set it in Mint on this machine to receive packets, but then when the computer restarts, it goes away, and I'm trying to get it so it stays set, and I don't know.
It goes away on shutdown, or it goes away on startup?
Restart.
Okay, it goes away on shutdown, or it goes away on startup? It's actually kind of hard to tell.
Yeah.
Write a script at the beginning of your startup that turns it back on. And then if your Wake on LAN doesn't work, you can be fairly certain that it's happening on your shutdown. So at that point, you might be able to script something depending on when it's erased or when the setting is redone. See what I'm saying?
I do. And there should be ways just to have it set up so that when the system starts up, it should be in there. Like, they had me add something to systemd slash network and then add a file called 50-wire.link and have it set up.
Okay. Yep. There's a couple of folders under etc. I think it's network, if up, if down, for automating scripts when network connects or disconnects. But I'm not sure that would help you or not. Depends on when that flag is removed.
Right.
Hey, boys.
Hey, how's it going? How's work treating you?
Yeah, just got off work, got off a little bit early, so thought I'd jump on.
I think you could set up push-to-talk on Plumble. That might be easier for you than as opposed to muting and unmuting.
Yeah. There's also activity-based.
I wonder if the background noise would affect the activity-based.
No, it's voice. But if you have a lot of sound around you, then it doesn't work very well. Called voice activation.
Yeah, I'll have to see if I can figure it out. I've never used Plumble before. I've always just used Plumble.
Yeah, I use Plumble quite a bit. There should be a button in the top right corner that allows you to adjust that. Let me bring it up here. Yeah, in the top right, there's those three dots, and then you can hit transmit mode, and it gives you voice activity, push to talk, or continuous. And that's where you can also set it to use your Bluetooth mic instead of the phone's mic.
Okay, how's that?
Good.
So this is with the headset's mic and push to talk.
Yeah, it sounds pretty good.
Where's 50?
We're all wondering the same thing. As far as I know, he was planning on being here. He didn't say anything last time about not being able to make it.
Has the show started yet? You're waiting on 50?
We're waiting on 50. I guess unless Honky wants to run it.
Well, one thing is, I mean, a lot of the show topics are 50's topics he didn't get to last week. Right, but we do have
rollovers.
Right. But we do have a lot of feedback from this week.
Well, I saw a few movies. I only saw Captain Marvel. That was pretty good.
Yeah, I actually got that for Father's Day.
Yeah. Well, if you've been recording this whole time, we've still got, you know, half a show.
Oh, of course.
What do you think about Captain Marvel? I thought I liked it. The guy, somebody on Tilts was saying that they refused to watch it for some reason. I don't know why, but I thought it was actually pretty good.
I enjoyed it.
I actually went into it with like low expectations and came out of it very surprised and very happy.
I mainly watched it because I hadn't seen Endgame yet, and I wanted to. I knew that tied in somehow, so.
Oh, the re-release of Endgame to make more money than Avatar.
Yeah, is there going to be extra scenes? Or what is the story?
Supposedly there's like a 6-minute cut scene at the end now, and that's why they're keeping it in theaters longer, because it's a re-release. And from what my wife was telling me in one of the articles she read, it was specifically to make more money than Avatar. That's what a lot of people are saying.
That sucks to the people that already went and saw it at the theater.
No, I'm not going back to the theater to see it again.
I saw a Nick Cage movie that came out last year called Mandy. That one was pretty good. That one was a crazy one. You guys heard of that, Mandy?
No.
It's kind of like a horror movie slash revenge slash biker. It's weird. It's a really weird movie. I saw it on Amazon Prime. It's free on there. But yeah, I'm usually not a big Nick Cage fan, just because not so much his later stuff. I like his early stuff.
What do you think of the streaming quality on Amazon Prime?
Well, when I watch it on my actual, I have a Roku. I watch it on there. It's actually pretty good. I don't know what they do differently, but when I watch it on like my laptop or something, it doesn't even, it says HD, but it doesn't seem HD.
Yeah, it doesn't look like HD on most of the systems I watch on. My wife says that she hasn't had any issues with Amazon Prime streaming and that it looks pretty good. But every time I've tried to set up any streaming, it doesn't matter the quality of my connection, it always looks like SD.
Yeah, I experienced the same thing, and I don't know if it's because the machine I'm watching it on. I usually watch it on my laptop, but yeah, it's Netflix. I used to have a Netflix account, and their HD actually looks like HD.
Right, exactly. And I still have Netflix mostly because until recently, T-Mobile was footing the bill. Now they're footing most of the bill because Netflix upped their prices.
Yeah, that's right. T-Mobile had that thing. And weren't they also like violating net neutrality laws where they would allow Netflix to stream for free? Against your data or something?
Right, it didn't count against your data. So there was some controversy about that. But I don't know if they changed that rule or not. But they kind of, you know, changed their policy on their data caps anyway. Because it used to be, you know, 10, 20 gig. And they always had one of the highest numbers. And now it's like 50, and then they might slow you down if it's a high congestion area.
And yeah, if I have a good signal, T-Mobile, it's great. I think I've gone over 100 gigabytes several times, and I've Not that I've not, I haven't noticed that I've been slowed down, but maybe it's because it wasn't during a high congestion area. But I haven't. The only issue with, for me with T-Mobile is the signal. Places that I go, I have some land in East Texas, and I don't get T-Mobile at all. It's AT&T.
Yeah, well, the coverage area for T-Mobile is usually pretty good. Any of the places I've lived, it's been at least decent. I mean, now if I were visiting Iowa, then sometimes I wouldn't get great signal. But the nice thing about that is you turn on the Wi-Fi calling.
Yeah, as long as you have Wi-Fi. I finished up the Swamp Thing series, the 90s series. That wasn't too bad.
Oh, you're caught up to episode 4?
No, the Swamp Thing series. Yeah, the one from the early 90s. I finished that. Now I'm ready to watch the new Swamp Thing.
Right, I picked up the one from the early 90s, but I have not watched it yet. But episode 4 came out yesterday, so I grabbed that, and I haven't watched it yet.
Is that going to be 10 episodes?
Supposedly it's 10 episodes, but that's because they cut production short on the last 3 episodes, and so far they've canceled the series because of tax issues. But hopefully, if the interest is high enough, they'll bring it back and just move it to another location.
Yeah, I remember we had kind of covered some of that 2 weeks ago. It's a shame.
It's been good.
I like what DC has done with their streaming shows so far. I'm not a huge superhero fan, but I like some of the stranger stuff. Like the Doom Patrol was really good. I liked the show that FX had, Legion. Did you guys see?
No, I couldn't make it all the way through the first season of Legion. I tried to like it. I really did. But it was just a bit rough, and I didn't enjoy it. So I didn't watch it.
It's very surreal and abstract and nonlinear.
Right. It's very Fight Club, but less interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely a different take. At first, I just couldn't stand how up its own butt it seemed to be and pretentious. But as I got into the storyline, I got more interested, and I'm kind of looking forward to this last season.
Yeah, maybe I just stopped watching it too soon. I don't know. But I did enjoy Titans, and I have enjoyed Doom Patrol. And we should be getting, I think, a second season of Titans at the end of the year, probably.
What have you thought of the new Swamp Thing so far?
Oh, the new Swamp Things are good too. A little darker, I think, than the 90s series, but it's supposed to be a horror show. So it's been good. I've enjoyed it.
See, I watched another movie called Highway to Hell that I'd never heard of before. I was surprised. I think it came out in 91 or 92. And it's got Rob Lowe's little brother in it, Chad Lowe, but it's got Christy Swanson the year before she made Buffy the Vampire Slayer, and she's really good at it, too. Y'all seen that Highway to Hell? It's about a guy and his girlfriend who are eloping to Las Vegas and making off the wrong road and end up in hell somehow.
No, I haven't seen it.
You should check it out. It's actually really entertaining. It has three of the Stillers in it. It's got Ben Stiller, a young Ben Stiller. It's got a sister, Amy Stiller, and it's got their dad, Jerry Stiller. And Gilbert Godfrey plays Hitler.
That's fantastic.
Plays who?
Hitler.
Hitler.
Is this the one that came out in 1990?
Yeah, that's got to be it.
No. I'm running into some stuff on YouTube that's all 4K. Are they going to later release it in HD or SD?
Well, you should be able to downscale it.
Is that the YouTube originals?
No, that's Endgame and whatnot. A lot of the movies are coming out. They're putting 4K in your... I've actually run into movies that they say your device can't handle it.
Shouldn't you be able to tell them to downscale?
Actually, I think they're trying to get premium. You're talking like $20 for a movie.
Nah. Buying, maybe. Renting, no.
Hell no.
Yeah, they're putting Endgame's pre-order is $15.
And that's only for you to be able to watch it on YouTube. It's not like you can stream it anywhere else, right?
And that's more than I paid to see it in theater.
That's crazy.
I would say at that level, they're shooting themselves in the foot, because I can watch about an entire weekend's worth of movies, including a lot of the Marvel stuff that's a little older, for like $3 or $4 a crack. I'll put $20 down, but I'll put it down on 2 days worth of movies, not one movie that I theoretically could see in the theaters.
Yeah, you could just go catch a matinee for half that price, less than that.
I mean, I want to get Deadpool and Deadpool 2, but Deadpool 2 is like $20 in 4K. And my best screen is 1080p.
That's okay. My best screen is 1080p.
Well, actually, my best screen is 1920 1200.
I think I have 1920 by 1200 as well. But I don't have it hooked up to anything. It's a whole Dell monitor.
Well, yeah, I'm thinking eventually. I've got a big TV 1080p, and I've got a 1920, you know, 1200. Eventually, I'm going to probably put the big TV on a separate machine. Then I might get pair up a couple of 1200s for my primary use, especially since I can get them refurbed fairly well, relatively inexpensively. I'm very tempted to put a 1920 by 1200 in portrait mode and see how that works.
That would be interesting.
Well, 1920 1200 would allow me to split the vertical screen horizontally, so I could have a couple of windows, you know, 1200 by whatever, which would be plenty for a lot of the stuff that I watch, and it would be definitely a writing screen. The ancient term full page display comes to mind.
That would be a good setup for reading ebooks and stuff too.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out how Linux deals with Kindle books.
Calibre
or Chrome.
Yeah, well, I wanna def. Well, when my Amazon tablet arrives, I'm gonna definitely go into the Kindle unit. Well, I'm going to go into the since it's going to be an unsimmed tablet. One of its primary functions is going to be a reader, but I don't want it to be the only machine that I can read my books on.
So download them to the desktop and convert them to whatever format you want to.
EPUB, MOBI, both work well.
TXT file.
Yeah, I just wondered, what is DR? Is there a lot of DRM on Amazon stuff?
Not the stuff I've used. No idea.
I convert a lot of books to MOBI to read on my Kindle, but I've never tried to get an actual Amazon MOBI file onto something else, so I don't know.
Yeah, well, I've got...
Calibre converts them easy enough. I mean, a couple clicks.
I'm aware of Calibre's power in that area. I was just wondering about the Amazon substrate, how DRM mad they are.
I think they were at one time, but I think they'd kind of given up on it. Like I said, I downloaded two books a while back, and I just downloaded them straight through. They downloaded them onto my a desktop computer and then used Calibre and converted it into text files.
Yeah, well, even... the way it looks between storage optimization, I'm about 500% above my reasonable storage of paper books. Budget optimization, Kindle or equivalent, whatever Barnes and Noble calls their stuff, would probably save my budget.
Is Barnes and Noble still putting out their own tablet?
I don't know if they're putting out their own tablet or they have their own format. I haven't checked that out.
See, I don't remember what the name of their tablet was.
Which company?
Barnes and Noble.
That was the Nook.
The Nook, that's right.
I don't think they support it anymore. I know they don't sell them anymore. You may still be able to buy the books on your old Nook. But
didn't Barnes and Noble get bought up by Amazon? Bought out by somebody?
That wouldn't surprise me. Amazon has bought out a lot of people.
I want to say no, but I may be wrong. I just feel like, because I've been in one somewhat recently, and I would feel like if Amazon bought out Barnes & Noble, then there would be a lot more, like, as soon as you walk in where they used to have the big Nook displays, it would be nothing but, like, Kindles.
I think it is, isn't it?
Maybe it is, and I just thought they were all Nooks. So I just didn't pay attention to them.
Well, I'm going to be going interested in when I get my tablet. Also, I got another gift from those folks in Redmond.
No, Barnes & Noble is up for sale, but nobody's bought them yet.
Who's in Redmond?
That other operating system.
Oh, I got you.
I got a gift because of the new Windows 10 10-1903. My brother has a machine with a 120 gigabyte SSD, and he can't install the new version of Windows on it.
Why?
It's Microsoft.
Fair.
Upgrade. 1903 requires 32 gigabytes of free space for an installation.
Oh, I got you.
Now, if he nuked and paved, he might be able to do it, but trying to do the upgrade where you've got a running system, it isn't working.
Now, has Windows 7 hit end of life?
It's supposed to be by the end of the year.
It's funny. I think my work just recently converted to Windows 7 from XP in like the last 5 years, maybe.
Now, what could Windows possibly put in an upgrade, a 32 gigabyte upgrade, that would make it worth being 32 gigabytes?
I believe that they're trying to make it so that whatever they throw at Windows, when you do an upgrade, it will have a reserve 32 gigabyte space.
Yeah, but I don't know if it was last year ago or 2 years ago, where you could still buy 16 gigabyte Windows devices. Laptops that only had 32 gigabyte SSDs that you could get from big box stores. So how are they going to do? How are they going to handle that lower end market?
But weren't those running out of space anyways when they did the upgrades?
Yes, a lot of them were, and a lot of them were pretty much end of life, and you had to run Linux on them to get them to do anything. But they're still there. Have they done anything with that problem?
Well, that Windbook I just bought, you know, maybe 4 months ago, it's only 32 gigabytes. And it had right. Windows 10 on it.
Exactly.
Well,
I never booted into Windows 10, so I don't know how it ran, but probably like crap.
Yeah, well, it's the whole netbook thing again.
Yeah. Well, netbook's current problems involve slow processors and only being 32-bit.
Well, also, Microsoft ordered that if you were going to run a Microsoft operating system, you could only put 1 gig in them. If you were going to run Linux, you could put 2 gigs in them.
2 gigs of what?
Memory.
RAM. But You know, there are other similar form factors now that are kind of awesome that still give you that whole netbook feel. Minix and I have fallen down that hole.
Your Chromebook is the spiritual heir to the netbook.
There's a couple of really good 2-in-1 tablet notebooks out there that more fill that niche for me than a Chromebook could.
Yeah, well, the medical professional I worked with had one of the Asus convertibles and had kind of problems with it.
The Asus Transformers? Was he running Windows or Linux?
Windows.
Yeah, I could see where it might be a problem. But I know Minix has the T100 TA, and I've had several of the T100 TAs. And yeah, they take some work to run Linux properly. I mean, with rotation fixed and sound fixed and everything else. But once you get it set up, it's awesome. And then there's the, I know I talk about it all the time, the Dell Venue 11 Pro 7130, which is just a beast when it comes to running Linux in a tablet form factor with very little fiddling to make it work right.
And what's the size of that?
That's a 12-inch device, 11.5-inch device.
So a lunch tray?
Well, like I said, it's an 11-inch device. That's why it's called the Dell Venue Pro 11. But it's not really a lunch tray. It's just a little heavier than your average tablet.
Fair.
Yeah, I really like the Transformer. It's a neat device.
Which is a 10-inch device, right?
Yeah, that's a 10-inch screen, the T100.
Now, how are those on battery life?
The T100 is a lot better than the Venue. I mean, most of the day, really, on the T100.
I haven't really stressed it as far as, like, running video and stuff on it. So I don't really know. But I use it as an interface for my server. And I've ran it 2 or 3 hours at a time. Have yet to run down the battery.
I've run it all day at work before, but I'm usually near a power source. And the T102HA is also pretty good. A little bit faster processor. I think it's got more RAM, but still the same size and form factor. The only thing is it only you can only get soft keyboards with it, the plastic cover ones.
Does it have Bluetooth?
Yes, and they both work. The T100 TA and the T102HA Bluetooth works.
See, I think those are awesome ideas. I don't think it's going to be a while before I ever get a chance to use one of those, but I think those are awesome ideas.
Well, if you get lucky, you can find the T100s, something in that line, preferably 2 or 4 gigs of RAM. You can get it sub $100. You can get it in that $75 range, which is why my kids both had a couple of those devices. Now, they tend to, you know, chew through them, which is why I learned to replace the screens. But they've worked well.
See, that's not the problem. The problem is
$100.
Right. The problem is I have, I'm sitting right here with 3 laptops in front of me. I have another laptop upstairs. I have a desktop sitting on top of the shelf here. And, I mean,
My T100 is dead. But I've also got the Dell Venue Pro 11 and a Dell Venue Pro 8 and a T102HA. So, yeah, I know what you're saying there. Too many devices, not enough time.
Right.
Or just plain too many devices, and you got to figure out something to do with them before you move on to another device.
Right.
Well, I got to tell you that the T11, if I get into the tablet looks pretty good. Although I don't know whether I will get a new one or a refurb.
Oh, the Venue Pro 11, 7130?
Yeah, I'm looking 7130, 7130,
don't
whatever.
Get the 7139, get the 7130.
Okay. So the one, 7130, it'll be a while. They even have a 5130, believe it or not.
Yeah, those are older, and I don't know how well Linux goes on them. I know that there are some difficulties with the 7139 getting it to work properly, but the 7130 is usually a breeze. I'd say try whichever Wi-Fi Bluetooth card comes with it, and if it doesn't work, buy one of the recommended ones. And they're usually like $10 to $12.
Yeah, well,
it's just it's a really neat experience having Linux on a tablet. It actually works. That was my favorite thing about it.
I think I'm going to let my brother's Asus A8 or whatever it is coming break me in the tablet world.
That's an Android device, right?
It's an Android device, but I'm just saying I'll see how well I use that, and if I need something with a bigger screen, I could go with the Linux device directly.
All right, I think I'm going to start the show, because there's a couple of the feedback topics, or the topics that were posted to the MeWe site that I really want to kind of get into. I mean, we were just talking about tablets and stuff, and one of them is about the Pine phone, and I really want to talk about the...
Can I make a suggestion since we seem to have most of a show already?
Sure.
Let's go over all of the feedback the way that you want to and all of that stuff. And then at the end, record the show opening and then just turn around and cut that section and place it at the beginning.
Well, we could do that. I mean, I have no problem also just doing an introduction of people, a quick, because I've cut the intro down to like a couple of lines, and then just doing an intro of everybody and then just leaving it all together, but with the intro to the show in the middle.
Okay. Well, if you want to do that, then I'm cool with whatever you want, since you're the guy doing the editing.
Before you start, can I ask you a question?
Ask away.
Say I have some links that I want to talk about, or I wanted you guys to talk about or address. Should I just add them to the show notes before the show starts? Or how does that work?
Before, during, after, whenever you want to put them in there. Hopefully some point when we can run the time we're talking about them.
Okay, yeah, I wasn't sure how you guys... I saw last show's notes, 50 or somebody had already had it all filled in before it started. So.
Yep, those were, I think, most of the stuff that was already filled in was either by 50 earlier, or some of it was carried over from the previous show. You know what? I'm going to go ahead and... Oh, shoot. I don't want to do that. I was just going to completely delete his carryover stuff. You know what? I'm going to set a separate page that is called 50 carryover and put all those links in there, and then we can... the whole show topic section will be clean. You can put whatever links you want in there.
Okay. Yeah. I was just unsure how you guys did that.
We're a fairly laid-back, easy-going group around here.
Yeah, we can kick the can on whatever show topics that get covered or don't get covered. We'll catch the ball sometime. We may do 50s topics next, you know, after the fourth.
All right, that show topic section is all cleared out. You want to start throwing... usually it's a good idea to just kind of put your name at the top and then put all of your links underneath it. I feel like it gives a reference to somebody who's listening to the show afterwards to which link you're talking about.
Yeah, and it also gives who's ever hosting the opportunity to call on you to have you read the topic.
That too.
Could you post that link in the... in the mumble chat?
Yeah, just a second. There you go.
Thank you.
Welcome to episode 128 of the Linux Slugcast. We are an open podcast slug that meets at 9 p.m. Eastern every first and third Friday of the month using Mumble. We encourage anyone listening to join us and participate on the podcast. Check out linuxslugcast.com for the server details. If you have any questions, comments, or topics you'd like us to discuss and are unable to join us during the live show, you can send us email at feedback@linuxslugcast.com. Check us out on MeWe. I'm not reading that out. Or check us out on IRC on Freenode, or pound Linux Slugcast. I am your host this evening, Honky Magoo. With me tonight is Ed.
Hello from Texas.
Joe.
Hello, also from Texas.
Minix.
Hello, also from Texas.
And Netminer.
Hello, folks.
It's funny, we got three people from Texas and two from Massachusetts. All right, so we have a plethora of stuff that was posted to our MeWe page, and four of them were posted by Danny Meeks or Minix. The first one is, Open Invention Network, the Linux-based patent non-aggression community. Exceeds 3,000 licenses.
This was pretty interesting. I didn't even know this existed. And I like the idea. It's companies agreeing to share patents with each other by joining this organization. And so I think the deal is if you join, you get access to all the other companies' patents that have joined as well and submitted their patents. And the agreement is that by joining, you agree not to go after, not to like patent troll or go after people that are using your patents. And I kind of like that because it's not forcing anything on anybody, and they're voluntarily joining this organization. I think somebody posted a link into mine that Microsoft had submitted 60,000 patents to this organization. But the patent non-aggression something. But I think it's a good idea. Software patents have caused a lot of angst.
Yeah, it says the OIN's mission is to enable Linux, its related software, and its programmers to develop and monetize without being hoodgeted. I feel like I'm H-O-G-T-I-E-D. Hogtied. Yeah, Jesus. All right, maybe it's just a little too late for me. Hogtied by patent flights. by patent fights. In Linux early years, this was a constant threat. Now, thanks largely to the ONI's efforts to get everyone to agree to the basic open source principles that it's better and more profitable to share than to cling to proprietary property, open source software has taken off in the marketplace. Yeah, I think it's getting a little late for me. And yes, Starship Tux had posted one that said, or I'll get back to the top of this page here. Microsoft donates 60,000 patents to the open source as it joins the OIN.
Yeah, they make case that you can actually, they appeal to like a business, their monetary sense, where they make the case that you can actually make more money by being open than you can by being closed. And it makes sense.
Yep.
I think that the argument that FOSS users have made for years now, and maybe some of these bigger companies will start listening.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. Hopefully it just keeps going.
Yeah, I have to agree. It does sound like a good idea. Let's see how it works out.
Right.
What's the next one?
The next one is how to test... Sorry, I'm getting pop-ups all over the place. How to test 200-plus Linux distributions without ever downloading or installing them. And basically, it's talking about distrotest.net. I want to say I brought this... what's that?
I remember that.
Yeah. It is a really cool website that lets you basically go into a VM of Linux distros and try them out. And it even gives you a link where you can, you can either use their web browser or use the web browser to test them out, or that gives you a link where you can remote into it.
Right, but because of this particular article, their servers crashed. And they're having to redo their entire infrastructure because of scale.
Yeah, this was the first time I had heard of it. Exactly. This was the first time I heard of it, and I tried it, and it worked great. And then I went to show a coworker, and the site was already down.
What? I tried it too, and it was just so slow.
Oh, yeah, it's a good thing, though. That means there's a lot of people who wanted to try Linux distros.
Yeah, it's an awesome idea.
All right, that website was killing me. I've had like several pop-ups. And I'd actually have to install an ad blocker at this point. I mean, I'm fine with just not paying attention to half the ads, but that was rough. All right, what else we got here? CERN switching to open source.
Yeah, that was surprising to me. Their main argument was they discussed how they had been lured into the Windows world by steep discounts for Windows software and support contracts heavily discounted. But then after a few years, those discounts went away, and now they're paying out the wazoo for Windows on their machines. And so it's not really so much an article as it is a essay written by, I guess, whatever IT person from CERN. But they talked about how Microsoft uses vendor lock-in to get all these companies locked into these contracts, and then it's almost too expensive to leave. It was good. I just like a high-profile company like that actually discussing open source.
Yeah, I think, last show we were talking about a couple of countries that were switching to open source? Or was it a city in India and then South Korea?
That sounds right.
I don't know if the Indian thing was a city or the entire state.
Yeah, the only news coming out of India right now is, or that I've heard recently, is the drought capital. Evidently, monsoon season is late.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. The name of the CERN project is called, I think it's called MALT, like the Microsoft Alternative Project. So they specifically call out Microsoft, CERN does, in discussing alternatives to using Microsoft Windows products.
Good. Now we just have to convince most of the schools that, it's okay for it not to be in a Microsoft Office format.
Right.
Perfectly okay to have it in OpenOffice format or LibreOffice format.
I believe officially Massachusetts allows the OpenOffice or whatever formats in their official documents.
Technically, most schools allow it, but each and every one of the teachers that you deal with say, oh, I couldn't get it to open, or, it needs to be in Microsoft format. None of the schools expressly forbid it being in that format, but none of your teachers can seem to open one of those documents.
Did you guys see the article about, I think it was the city of Baltimore? It may have been Atlanta. City Hall had been hacked, basically, and held for ransom, if they didn't pay so much Bitcoin.
And I think Atlanta was an old one, and Boston is the most recent one, and they're trying to rebuild around all their lost data.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, that's right. I think it brought up Atlanta as an example and then talked about Boston. But what I read in the article is interesting was they had the same thing. Everything was Microsoft, and they said the biggest obstacle was getting Windows licenses, new Windows licenses discounted because they already had Windows licenses on these machines, and they were just getting rid of all the hardware and starting new. And so they were, nuking and paving Windows. And they said that was one of the biggest financial woes of this whole ransomware attack was dealing with Microsoft to use their software and get their licenses again.
I thought there was some kind of ransom thing going on with Baltimore. And when I first read that article, it sounded like a parody article when I started reading it.
Yeah, I think it was Baltimore. And I think the newest one is Baltimore. The whole time reading that, I was thinking,
You know, you don't even have to deal with licenses if you don't want to. Just don't use Windows.
So the ransomware for the Boldware one was asking for $76,000.
I'm not going to be available for the next few minutes. So I should hopefully be able to hear you, but I will be back.
Alrighty.
Yeah, same here. I got to duck in and get something to eat, but I'll try to jump back on before before the show's over.
Okay.
I hate it when I'm listening to somebody and their mouth is full of food. So I don't want to subject anybody else to that.
Alrighty. All right, so the next one is the people over at the Pine are putting out a $149 Pine phone, a Linux smartphone that will support modular add-ons.
So do you think this would do GPS and maps?
I think so. So, trying to see if I can pull up the specs for it.
I've gotten so...
I think we lost you. You cut off. You said you... I've gotten so...
I've gotten very attached to Google Maps while I'm driving.
Right. So, specifications. It has a all-winner A64 quad-core SoC with Mali 400 MP2 GPU. 2 gigabytes of LPDDR3. It's a 5.95 LCD screen. 1440 by 720, 18.9 aspect ratio, a bootable micro SD card. That's interesting. 16 gig eMMC, HD digital video out, USB-C for power, data, and video out, a See, I'm going to screw this up. It's a QUECTEL, so QuickTEL EG25G with worldwide bands. Wi-Fi 802.11bg and N, single band hotspot capable, Bluetooth 4.0, GNSS, GPS, GPSA, GLONASS. So it's got GPS in it. It's got a vibrator, RGB status LED, selfie and main camera, 2 to 5 pixel. So 2 pixel probably be in the selfie and 5 be in the main camera. Main camera, 5 megapixel with a flash sensor. It's got accelerometer, gyro, proximity, compass, barometer, ambient light, 3 external switches for up, down, and power. The switches... So the article... Let's see if I can go back. Was talking about the switches. I think the switches were for... kill switches for Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, cellular modem, front and back cameras, and microphone. So battery is a Samsung J7 form factor, 3000 milliamp hour battery. Case is matte black finish, plastic, and it has a headphone jack. Let's see what else we can find about this. So the article also gives a list of some of the operating systems that are available on it. Let's see. Post-market OS. Port of Loon OS. Sailfish OS. Apparently Nemo Mobile. Glacier UI. Sway Tiling. Wayland Memo. I think I'd be happy with Sailfish. Isn't Sailfish the one where you can run Android apps in?
I think so.
I'd be happy with Sailfish. If I can get it running on a US carrier, well, I'd be happy with Sailfish. And $149, that ain't bad.
Now, is that the one that's only a Wi-Fi phone, or does it actually work on carriers?
It says it has. It didn't give give an odd specification on the phone site. So, it has, again, I'm going to try to screw this up, QUECTELEG25G with worldwide bands. I'm not well versed in the cell phone.
Yeah, I'm not well versed enough to tell you anything about what you just said there.
Right.
I have a question about cell phones and maps.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Where does
Shut up.
Where does live traffic data come from? For example, does Android GPS share live traffic data with iPhone GPS?
I don't know.
And then for a cell phone that's not Android or iPhone, would it get any traffic data at all?
Well, it doesn't have to be Android or iPhone to get data from Google. So it's entirely possible that it would get traffic data.
But that is a proprietary thing belonging to a certain company, I wonder?
I don't know. I mean, traffic data has been around for ever.
So just on a quick search, I found that Google Maps uses a few sources for traffic data. Local highway authorities, road sensors, car and taxi fleets, crowdsourced anonymized traffic data from people using Google Maps apps on certain smartphones, including Android and Palm WebOS devices, but excluding the iPhone.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I guess I was just assuming that it was crowdsourced.
That's part of it.
From all of your fellow drivers.
But if you're using, I think even if you're using Google Maps, it doesn't matter that you're not using a Google device, I don't think, because you're still using the Google app, so it's still the Google app will still phone home and get that information from other people. Yeah, and it one of the things that leads me to believe that it's going to have at least some form of, cellular connectivity is the fact that that's one of the four kill switches on it is for the cellular modem. All right, does anyone have anything else about the PinePhone?
Probably. Well, I'll heavily consider getting one, but I don't think anybody will consider that as their daily driver.
Like I said, unless I can get good cellular connectivity on it.
Well, if it had some kind of built-in desktop mode with it, I'd be more likely to consider it as a daily driver. But I still wouldn't mind getting one and messing around with it, so maybe I'll wait for them to come up on the used market.
All right. Can you guys give me 2 minutes? I feel like that's been said a lot.
So, Netminer, you still haven't gotten that stuff from your brother yet? So, Ed, what's
I'm here.
Going on in your neck of the woods? I think you were cutting in and out again.
I heard you on Tilt talking about Docker.
Yeah, I like playing around with Docker.
Yeah, I'd like to learn more about it, too.
Yeah, well, like I said, I'm not an expert. I dabble with it. And just from the perspective of, I grab other people's images and I play around with them. So, on my server, I have an image of LibreSonic, which is awesome for video podcasts. And, when you make it with Plex, it's awesome for video podcasts. And for keeping my audiobook library organized. And then I think I still have an image of Ghost, which I don't use much anymore. And I have a VPN Docker image there that I use quite a bit. And I think I still have an instance of Chrome on there, but I don't use that one anymore because I don't have a monitor hooked up to that anymore. But I do have an instance of the VPN and Chrome on all my other machines.
Sorry, a lot of coffee and tea to keep me awake.
Yeah, it is getting a little late. Yeah, my wife got me a 64-ounce coffee mug.
64?
64-ounce TARDIS. Well, it looks like a TARDIS coffee mug, because Think Geek is going out of business and has everything on. Well, they're not going out of business, but they are moving, and so they're clearancing basically everything. But yeah, 64-ounce coffee mug.
Jesus Christ.
Right, that's a heart attack waiting to happen.
It is. I have a 30-ounce mug that's pretty dang big, and I have a 40-ounce container of water sitting next to it, and I can't even imagine a 64.
Right. I have a picture of it up on Facebook, but I don't think I'm friends with any of y'all on Facebook.
I am pretty much just friends with my relatives, and that's it.
Yeah, well, basically anymore, I use Facebook for Facebook Marketplace. It was the first time I had posted something, and I think at all this year. But I do enjoy the Facebook Marketplace.
Yeah. It's not great around here.
It's pretty good around here. Pretty good. I mean, some things people greatly overvalue, or they try to sell it, you know, at new price. But if I was going to pay new price, I wouldn't be getting it on Facebook Marketplace.
Right. I get a lot of
it. You can find some really good deals there.
Most people around here seem to greatly overvalue things.
Well, if they're greatly overvaluing it, what you can do is save it. And when they don't sell it, they'll usually come back later and start slowly lowering the price. And you just have to gamble that the price they get to is the one you're willing to pay before they get to somebody else willing to pay it.
That is true. I don't think I have the patience, especially when the last time I tried doing that, when I was trying to look for a laptop, a reasonably priced laptop, I wound up going on eBay and finding one pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. eBay, you have to wait, though.
That's true.
For shipping.
Right. And I don't have the fun experience of meeting some of the wonderful people in my neighborhood.
Yeah.
At the house.
Well, you don't have to meet them at the house. You could say, look, I don't mind meeting you somewhere to buy this, but I prefer it to be at Walmart or the police station or something like that for both of our protection.
Nice, well-lit area with lots of people.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of police stations these days have areas set up specifically for that.
Right.
Either that or you pick a well-lit parking lot.
Right. All right. Now we're into Crean Matthews' posts. Those who don't know, he writes a blog, so and he likes to post his blog to our site, to our MeWe page, and that's cool. They're all Linux-related. The first one...
We'll give him some free publicity.
Hell yeah. Gives us stuff to talk about. Is Linux safer than Windows and Mac OS? Some of his key points were... a less frequent target. So in other words, because Linux isn't as popular, that we're not as big of a target. Creating malware is much more difficult because of the whole permissions involved with Linux. Strong community of developers, which is always true. I mean, in a little bit we're going to get to the... kernel bug that Netflix says that they found, and from what I've read in some of the articles, I believe they already have that one patched. So Linux isn't bulletproof. That's true. We're just talking
nothing
about that.
Nothing is bulletproof.
Nothing is bulletproof. Use a VPN. Always a good idea. Always update. Also always a very good idea. Check your third-party downloads. Always a good idea, because things that go into most distros' repos have been vetted by the people in charge of that distribution. Firewalls and virus scans. Well, I think firewalls is a good idea. Virus scans.
I do have a question for you when it comes to firewalls. Because I know one of my fellow podcasters on Mintcast, what they do is they have their firewall on their router, and then they have a firewall on each individual machine. And I just really don't see the point in that. Do you?
Well, some Linux distros come with their version of a firewall on them. So I know Red Hat based distros, I believe, have. I'm blanking on what that is, and I know Ubuntu based distros have AppArmor. Is that right? Yeah. For the most part.
But is it turned on usually?
So in the, I know in CentOS, because I set up the our Etherpad that we use for show notes and stuff is running on, I put CentOS on a Banana Pi. I put it on a Banana Pi and I'm running it, I'm running Docker on a Banana Pi. And one of the things I had to do when I first set that up was put a hole in the CentOS's firewall. So it'll work. I feel very strongly about my router's firewalls. I mean, I have right now, like the all my laptops and stuff are about two routers deep. So there's two firewalls in between me and the internet. I want to set up a another firewall that's just basically its purpose is to be a firewall and put because I want to play around with things like snort and intrusion detection systems and what's the other one? It's not intrusion detection, it's threat detection. Either way, I know there's IDTs and something that detects, I don't know. Anyways, I set up, I know I've played a little bit with Snort before, and I would like to play a little bit more with things that are, you know, intrusion detection systems and stuff. It's just more of fun. My one problem is I don't want to get too crazy with it, because if I all of a sudden start blocking internet access to the house, there's going to be a mutiny. But on each individual system, no. I mean, I'd keep, if it's behind the firewall, like I don't set up permissions on any of my servers, really. I mean, I have Samba set up on a Raspberry Pi that I have set up on the network, and I have it set up so there's absolutely zero permissions or passwords or anything for it. I feel like if you've made it past my, you've made it onto my network, congratulations, you won.
Yeah, I can agree with that.
So the answer is no. As a general rule, I don't set up any firewalls on each individual machine. I know it's there to do it, but I definitely don't go out of my way to do it. Though I don't do anything like besides going on the internet. Most of my laptops don't do anything that I think will require you opening up ports anyway. So I really wouldn't know whether it's on or not. Like, I've never set up any of my laptops as a server. I've usually used my plethora of single board computers as servers first.
Right. Okay, was there anything else to the article?
Password managers, which we've, at least I've talked about here before. How you doing with, getting too late.
I'm integrating LastPass.
LastPass, that's right.
Yeah, I haven't wholly adopted it yet, and I really should switch over to it.
Yeah, same thing with me and KeePass. I have it pretty much set up on all the machines. I have I have it set up so it's syncing all of the sync thing. I'm using sync thing to sync the password folder file. And it works, but I need to start changing over some all my passwords and stuff to something. Some passwords that are a little bit better. It's a slow process.
Yeah.
Let's see. Was there anything else here? Cybersecurity is all about digital hygiene. Yeah, that's a good point. I'm not sure what about that really made anything which is more secure, Linux, Windows, or Mac, because it really doesn't talk about any of the other distro, doesn't talk about Windows or Mac at all. But, I mean, it gives some good tips, I think, or at least some good ideas.
Right. And basically the idea there is the idea that Linux is more secure because it's less popular is, I don't know, a bit off.
Well, okay, there's not a whole lot of...
Less people are writing viruses and malware specifically designed for Linux. Yes, that is true, but that doesn't mean that it's not vulnerable.
True.
But the great thing is yes, there are many, many developers, and anytime something is found that could cause a problem, a patch is usually available almost immediately.
See, I feel like there's a lot more, there's not a whole lot of viruses geared towards Linux, but there's anytime something arises, it's usually that there was a flaw somewhere. Like, there's something wrong somewhere in the code where it's leaving a hole somewhere. It's not like there is a virus that's spreading, you know, rampant on I haven't heard of any recently of any like rootkits that are been spread around or something like that. It's right. Mostly that there was some flaw in the code somewhere, and somebody found it, and you know everyone went, "Hey, this could cause a problem if we don't fix it," and then it gets fixed.
Right. You hear less about viruses these days and more about malware of some kind.
Right. Now, I don't, from just a general understanding, I don't think ransomware could work on a Linux system.
It's not designed to. There have been instances where people have been able to make it work on a Linux system. I mean, it would be fairly easy if you had a Samba share set up on one computer that was a Linux machine and it was available to a Windows machine. It could still encrypt everything that's on it.
True. That makes sense.
And then people have gotten it running under VMs on Linux just to test things out. Or under Wine on Linux. But I don't think there have been any instances in the wild.
But even if you get it, even if you get running in Wine, is it able to get the whole entire system or just the sections that are running the Windows emulator?
I don't remember enough to tell you if it did or not. I'm sure the person that was testing out made sure to isolate everything anyway.
Right.
You?
Right.
So I'm not sure.
All right, the next article is learn how to add a user to a group in Linux.
You mean with userAdd?
Yeah. Sudo userAdd-g group name, new username. Yeah. If you need to add a user to a group in Linux, this is a good article outlining how to do it.
And for everybody that doesn't know, group permissions is another security feature within Linux that will allow users in a specific group to access files that are owned by that group and not necessarily by the specific user.
Right. So the next article is three best Linux distributions for programmers.
Hmm. Which ones are those?
I'm scrolling down here. So he starts the article off with talking about stable versus rolling distros versus developers.
Is Arch one of them?
I haven't. I'm just kind of skimming at the moment, so I haven't seen a distro named yet.
I can guess. I mean, if you want stability, you definitely go with Ubuntu.
I was just about to say, I got further down here. It says best Linux distros programming compared. So number one was Ubuntu. Number two was Arch. Three, Fedora. Yeah. So basically your regular ones. I'm not sure why. I don't know. Arch, sure.
You don't know why Arch?
Yeah. You would think a programmer would want something that's a little more stable.
Possibly. I mean, isn't Arch fairly stable unless you're grabbing all the bleeding edge stuff yourself?
No, I'm pretty sure Arch kind of... I know a lot of people who run just straight Arch talk about how they have to keep an eye every time they do an update and, you know, make sure that it doesn't... anything breaks. And a lot of times things do break because Arch is bleeding edge. That's what it is. It's... they get everything that's newest of the new.
Okay.
That's why I've always kind of liked Arch variants.
Right. And Integros.
Manjaro. Integros is the one that's going away, isn't it?
Yeah, but everybody's fairly certain that the community is going to pick it up. And they're going to call it something else.
I used different versions of Manjaro before. I've been happy with that.
I don't know. I've just never, you know, fallen down the arch rabbit hole.
Try it sometime. Pac-Man is fantastic.
Yeah, well, I'm trying to do a bit more with Sentos and Fedora when I have an opportunity. But Arch still isn't on my list.
How's that going?
I'm not far into it yet. I mean, I've set up a VM with Sentos, and that's about it.
I got, like I said, I had Sentos running on the Banana Pi, mostly because I wanted to learn some Red Hat based stuff, and I pretty much got that thing set up, and then it's just been like an appliance now. So
yeah, you haven't touched it, haven't played with it,
right? I mean, besides having to restart some of the Docker stuff, I mean, I haven't gone now, past that.
The Banana Pi will run all of the same operating systems as the Raspberry Pi, right?
No. It's a smaller base. I mean, a smaller group of distros, not as vast as the Raspberry Pi.
Okay.
I was surprised to see that CentOS was on the list, because at least CentOS was one of the more recent ones. But I'm pretty sure that, you know what, I don't remember what the Diet Pi runs on it, but I believe Armbian does.
A Diet Pi is not a full operating system, right? That's just an installer for applications.
Diet Pi is basically Armbian with an add-on for an installer for applications and stuff. But it's the base of it is Armbian.
Cool. Armbian, Raspbian.
Armbian.
Huh?
Armbian.
Okay. Can you install the DietPi installer onto Raspbian?
Onto Raspbian?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's a different distribution. I'm not sure what the difference is between Raspbian and Armbian.
Well,
I want to say
Debian based. I'm assuming.
Yeah, but I want to say that the people doing Raspbian kind of put their own stuff on that to make it a little bit more geared towards the Raspberry Pi, while Armbian is just geared towards ARM devices. It's a little more broader scope. Ed, are you trying to talk, or are you just hitting the button by accident?
I must have been hitting it by accident. Sorry about that.
No, that's fine. I just...
If you've got it set to the space key and you're trying to type, that can make things interesting.
Yeah, that was it. Sorry.
No worries.
I didn't know whether you had any trouble talking.
It's even more interesting when you have a lot of background noise in whatever area you're in, because then the noise starts and stops suddenly.
Yeah.
Which is why I think most of my push-to-talk systems anymore are right control.
I'm using right alt at the moment.
Yeah, same idea.
I use alt Z.
Yeah, I use alt Z for muting and unmuting my microphone. So I use a continuous setup right now, so I can do hands-free. But if I need to mute my mic, I just click and click. Actually, no, this isn't continuous. It's voice-activated. But I've also got a Japanese keyboard, so I have Alt-Z set up, and I have one of the extra keys on the Japanese keyboard that I can use to mute and unmute my mic. That way I can hold conversations with you guys and my wife at the same time.
Smart.
Why wasn't he getting his shots in Florida? Yes.
Yeah, some quick Googling. The only thing I can find is just basically what I said. Armbian is the opposite of Raspbian in the fact that Raspbian has dozens of contributors to focus on a single SPC platform. Armbian has dozens of contributors to focus on 100 plus SBCs and over 30 platforms, and that was in the Armbian documentation.
Yeah, I couldn't find anything that specifically said you could install the DietPi installer onto Raspbian, so they were almost treating DietPi like an operating system, but I was fairly certain that it was just an installer on top of another operating system.
Yeah, I know it's Armbian under the hood, but I'm not sure whether the guy, I'm not sure how many people there are working on it. The people over at Diapie are putting their own sauce on it to basically it's Armbian with an installer, and that may very well be it.
I'll have to do some more reading up on it.
So the next one kind of follows the same line as the last one, as it's gamers, what is the best Linux distribution to play? Best Linux distro for gaming. Here's 8 examples of how to help choose the best Linux distro for you. Number 1 is SteamOS. 2 is Ubuntu Game Pack. 3 is Fedora the Game Spin. 4 is Netminer's favorite Sparky Linux. 5 is Latka. And Latka is basically kind of like RetroPie or RetroArch. Number 6 is Game Drift Linux. 7 is Solus. Does anyone know whether Solus is still being developed?
I thought it was dead.
I know Ikey left, but I didn't know if anybody else was took that ball and kept running with it. 8 is Manjaro Gaming Edition. 9 is Super Gamer. There's a lot of gaming-based distributions that I had never heard of before. 10 is Batocera Linux.
Batocera is pretty cool.
Is it really?
Oh, yeah. Especially if you like retro gaming. I mean, it's basically RetroArch as a front end, but it also has Kodi built in. And it's really great to have all of that on a 64-bit operating system. The only problem I've had so far is I haven't been able to get Nintendo 64 games to operate. But from my reading, it's an OpenGL issue, and I haven't gone in to fix it yet.
Oh.
But, yeah. I mean, it plays PlayStation games. Awesome. I was playing Armored Core Masters of Arena on it last time without any problems, and even switching discs without any problems. And I was playing Sega games because I'm a big fan of Shadowrun. On Sega, not on the Super Nintendo. And, you know, I put a bunch of the arcade versions of, what is it, Marvel vs. Capcom on there, and those played just fine. So, yeah, it is really awesome. And then, you know, a full version of Kodi that you can switch over to, and I'm sure you can put add-ons on and set it up however you like. So if you're interested in a box that's strictly hooked up to your TV for either retro gaming or for watching movies, then Batocera is perfect.
Cool. I'll have to look into that.
And I have it set up on an old ThinkPad X120E, which is a 12-inch device. It's basically a netbook. And the processor on it scores like 750 on Passmark. And it does it great.
Nice. So they have downloads available for 64-bit, 32-bit, Raspberry Pi 0 and 1. A
bunch
1.
Of other SBCs, yeah.
Yeah, Pi 2, Pi 3, the Oldroid XU4, Oldroid C2, N2, S905, and variants. I don't know what an S905 is. And then the Rock Pro 64.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of Batocera.
Are we doing some cleaning?
Hmm?
I said, are we doing some cleaning?
Oh, I'm ironing.
Oh, all right. That's some good multitasking.
Yeah. Figured I'd get my pants and shorts ready for next week. Except my mic keeps slipping.
All right. And the last link was put into me by Blaine Clark. And that's the one about Netflix finding the patch sack panic kernel bug. I've tried reading both this article and other articles, and either I am not smart enough to figure this stuff out. I'm also kind of confused as to why or how Netflix stumbled onto this problem.
Hmm. I haven't read the article.
Then the wording of the ZDNet article, Netflix to Linux users, patch sack panic kernel bug now to stop remote attacks.
Right. Because they found that it's possible to do an attack using it doesn't mean you're going to find it anywhere out in the wild.
Right.
And the patching will happen automatically.
Right. Netflix discovers multiple critical security flaws in Linux and FreeBSD kernels. TCP stack that could lead to server outages. Oh. Organizations are running large fleets of production Linux computers are being urged to apply new patches to stop remote attackers from crashing the machines. Three flaws affect how the Linux kernel handles TCP networking, and one affects the FreeBSD TCP stack. The most serious of the four flaws, the CVE-2019-11477, is called SAC Panic, referring to the Linux kernel's TCP selective acknowledgement SAC capabilities. Remote attackers can exploit this flaw to trigger a kernel panic that could crash a machine, leading to denial of service. This affects Linux kernel versions from 2.6.29 and above. Netflix detailed the bug in an advisory posted on GitHub and has collectively rated them as critical severity flaws. However, Red Hat individually rates SAC Panic as having an important severity, while the remaining bugs are considered moderate. This goes on. Sorry, I'm kind of skimming through the rest of this.
All right, I think I'm going to have to restart my computer real quick. I will jump right back on. I might not have to do a full restart, but I am going to have to do a Control-Alt-Delete. Nothing wants to work.
Alrighty. Netminder at Ed, have you guys looked at any of this at all? Or can you make heads or tails of it? When I first saw this, I was going to forward it to Father Finch, since I know he does a lot more with networking type stuff, and see if he could at least make a little bit more sense of it.
I see a little lower. Red Hat notes in its advisory that the impact is limited to denial of service at this time and cannot be used for privilege escalation. So it's pretty limited.
So if Netflix has a guy who can find this problem, then how come they couldn't just patch it? Or just, you know, send it up as a kernel bug and, you know, the kernel developers will patch it or give you a better answer about it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I really can't tell whether it's Netflix or just the people who write the articles, that the way a lot of this seems to be worded is, you know, Netflix throwing their hands in the air going, "What the hell, Linux?" Maybe that's just maybe just the way that a lot of these articles seem to be written. Because, like I said, the title of the article is "Netflix to Linux Users: Patch SAC Panic Kernel Bug Now to Stop Remote Attacks."
Everybody still there?
Nope, everyone's gone.
Okay, I'll just, you know, go home then.
You're already home.
Oh, yeah, foiled again.
All right, I think that is the last of our links for the evening. Minix hasn't finished eating, and he didn't put any links in.
Yeah, I think he was planning on putting the links in that were already put in for him from him sharing on our MeWe page.
I was going to tell Minix I really enjoyed his wildlife photography.
The family of raccoons?
Yeah, that was really good.
Well, before we close out tonight, I mean, does anybody have anything they're working on that they want to talk about?
Nah, most of what I've been doing is working on Bluetooth headphones lately. Some time off from working on computers to work on headphones on my vacation. I got my roof done yesterday.
That's always fun.
Yeah.
I suggest you look around. There may be a lot of proto Linux boxes available.
Proto Linux boxes?
Yes. Microsoft is is not going to allow people not to upgrade to
Windows 10
Linux 10. So if your machine couldn't run it 1903, well, you're going to either have to replace your storage or get a new machine.
All right, so keep an eye on resale right now for devices resale, with less than...
Resale, curbs, all sorts of places, dumpsters, whatever.
Right, and when is this going into effect?
I don't know. I saw it on Hackaday, either Hackaday or GHacks, and they were kind of thin on the details.
Never mind picking up low-cost devices to play around with.
Well, this is going to deliver into my hands a 128 gigabyte NVMe SSD. And,
really? 128 gig is still too small?
Well, it's too small for an upgrade. Nuke and Pave might work, but my brother is already going to a 256 name brand.
Wouldn't think 128 would be too small. I think you just have to clear some stuff off of it, like old updates or something.
Well, I spent some hours going through the update process, and Microsoft's updater threw up its hands and said, sorry, you don't have enough storage to do the update.
Awesome. Put Linux on it. It'll work fine.
But it won't run the games that he bought the system for. Also,
Everybody that's listening, if you can't put your 128 gigabyte NVMe drive to work anymore, please feel free to send it to me or Netminer.
Well, the thing about it is that he bought his computer from a finance company, which is always a good source of computers, and it matched the current specs of similar machines being issued by HP. However, when you look at the smart data on the hard drive, you'll find that the hard drive is a 7200 RPM hard drive that has been considerably used, while the SSD shows limited usage in its smart data.
So it's got two hard drives, and it couldn't put the update information onto the other hard drive?
This is Windows. We only know about drive C.
Ah, well, okay. And get into, making it look like drives are mounted as folders in the proper location to be able to do an update. It used to work on old Windows systems, but I don't know if it would anymore.
You got to remember that Microsoft is taking as much control away from the user as possible. Also, what is going to be really interesting, since and I'm going to be doing this tomorrow or maybe in 15 minutes, since he said we were going to do it on Saturday, that he's putting a Samsung 970 256 gigabyte SSD in. Now, I'm told by something that I saw today that the lower priced NVMe's are about half the speed of the top of a 970. So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens when he takes out the generic NVMe SSD and loads Windows onto a brand name unit.
If he notices. I mean, yeah, it's faster, but once it's so fast, do you really notice a difference?
I think the, because of the, I think it's going to be more of a lifespan issue. Because the fast SSDs use a lower bit count cell.
Right, they don't use the TLC.
Actually, QLC is what's coming out now. 4 bits per cell.
Ah, yeah, they wouldn't have as long of a lifespan.
And so doing the upgrade is probably going to be worthwhile. Also, the machine has 12 gigabytes of main memory, which a suspicious person may suspect that some upgrader got a machine off lease that was 8 gigs and a 7200 RPM hard drive, which is at one time was pretty fast.
Right.
Threw in your generic cheapest NVMe Chinese special and a 4 gig memory stick to fill the empty slot that was left in the original configuration. And then said, here you go, here's a new machine. Well, almost new machine.
So it's got an 8 gig stick and a 4 gig stick.
Yes, in a DDR4 machine.
Well, I know sometimes if you don't match the RAM exactly, you get, yes, you still have 12 gigs of RAM, but it doesn't benchmark as well because you don't get that paired RAM. What's it called?
Interleaved or whatever, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the thing is that he's got an i7, and this is a 17-inch machine, which is another thing that makes it kind of odd. Because evidently the 17s were not as popular as the 15.6.
Yeah, the 17s are not as popular. Even now, you're seeing a lot more 13s and 15s coming out, but less and less of the 17s.
Yeah, the 17s are considered a desktop replacement, I think, in a lot of places.
Yeah, that's kind of what I use my 17 for. But wasn't there a 22-inch that came out a couple of years ago? $4,000 freaking, or no, it was a $9,000 laptop.
Well, yeah, this is an HP Omen, which is evidently HP has swallowed up a gaming system or laptop creator.
Yeah, I've heard very mixed reviews with HP Omens, so I don't know what to think about them in general. But yeah, if I'm going to have a gaming laptop, I'm going to try for a 17-inch.
Well, his prior laptop was barely making the minimum specs for the game that he absolutely had to run. So therefore, he had to buy a new machine.
Did he send you that laptop? The old one?
Because he has to upgrade his current laptop, everything's on hold.
Ah, okay. So he's thinking about selling it to get the NVMe.
No. He spent his money to get the NVMe and the toolkit to install it.
Okay.
Right. He can't ship even the tablet because he has no money for shipping, and he's going to have a rather lean week. But he's going to have his upgraded laptop.
Yeah.
Well, he lives on the road, and his laptop.
Yeah, you kind of got to do what you have to make that type of thing bearable or less tedious.
Yeah. Well, that's the deal. He's got unlimited AT&T cellular internet and stuff like that.
That's cool.
Now, what's going to be interesting is when I get the NVMe card, I mean the NVMe, stick, I could go down to my Micro Center and get a
PCIe adapter?
Yeah, a full-size, 4X PCI adapter. Also, if I recall my motherboard correctly, I have a bunch of regular SATA connections, so that what I may end up with in at least one of my machines is the NVMe and a regular SSD. The reason I would go with that configuration is for
bootability purposes.
Bootability, and if you're going to do virtuals, I have heard that doing having your virtual hard disks on a separate SSD improves performance. So that your OS and your VMs are keeping them separate is supposed to.
So they're not competing for read write cycles. Okay, I can kind of see that.
Also, I suspect that way I can put probably the. I would probably want the NVMe to be my boot device, and then then I could have a larger SATA drive for VM storage. Also, on a related hardware support note, NVMe storage externals using USB 3.1, you know, the 10 or 20 gigabyte version, basically the two external enclosures that they had were virtually the same for IO speed. And they said that you need 3.1 to maximize throughput on an NVMe SSD.
Right. Yeah, I got two of the adapters. One of them, the port has come loose, and I'm going to have to get in there with the soldering iron and try and reseat it. And the other one, I'm not sure if it's 3.0 or 3.1. But the speeds are okay.
Also, he said if you buy the external, which this technician on YouTube was testing, investing in a good cable for the particular mix that you are doing, whether you are doing Type C to 3.0 or whatever it was, would save your bacon, because sometimes the stuff shipped by the manufacturer is just not up to the job. Sort of like having a Cadillac with retread tires.
Huh.
Well, that's my input on the hardware side. I have looked at some of the newer information on boxes, and it appears there's more information out, but it's hugely underdocumented.
On what?
GNOME boxes, the virtual platform that I'm looking at. The one thing that makes it really interesting for someone with several potential VM servers is boxes is supposed to have very good remote access to other VMs. So it's not, it's supposed to have specific hooks for talking from a box's installation to a VM on another host. I haven't looked into that, but I like the idea of getting away from VirtualBox for Linux operation, because having something that's more native will probably get the most performance out of my rapidly aging hardware. Shall we close this session of the Lugcast?
Yeah, I'm ready to go.
Alrighty. So our next recording date will be July 5th, 2019. Our music is Downright, provided by Klaatu and Broom. We'd like to thank Delwyn for the use of his Mumble server. We would also like to thank 000 Web Hosting for our web hosting. And finally, we'd like to give a special thanks to Father Finch, Tony Bemis, for all their help and support over the years. I have been your host for this evening, Hunk Magoo. With us tonight has been Ed. Joe.
Good night, all.
And Netminer.
By the way, happy 4th of July, folks. We're going to be a little late by the next time we gather together.
A little bit. Good night.
SMLR 2.0 is the revamped Sunday Morning Linux Review with Tony Bemis, Mary Tomich, and Tom Lawrence. On even episodes, we cover distro fever and tech news. On the odd episodes will be fresh looks where we review a distro or software or tips and tricks. Live recordings are bi-weekly. Sunday morning on both Google Hangouts on air and audio only stream. Visit smlr.us for all the shows and the live recording schedule.
Oh my God, it's Hacker Public Radio.
Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
The Linux Link Tech Show. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Find us on the web at www.twlts.org or email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC server, thelinuxlink.net /techshow. Join Pat, Alan, Link, and Joel. And don't forget the two Dans. They are so hot. I know, because I've kissed them both. And Blind Rich, he's a bloody drunk.
If you don't like a guest, you can get up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll link it back.